тут записалось. Сегодня у нас на семинаре выступает Анвар Баймуратов из Мюнхена, Людвиг Максимилиан Юниверсити, Нанофотоникс Групп, вот с такой темой. И, значит, потенциально мы рассматриваем Анвара как будущего нашего сотрудника. Вот, поэтому, ну, добро пожаловать и вопросы активнее, чтобы получить все ответы.
Thank you very much. We will speak in English, yes? Is I understood? Or what is the... Okay. Thank you for a very nice introduction. And today we will talk about excitons in the 2D materials. And I will show you some possibilities how to tune their properties in 2D semiconductors, mostly in transition metal dihalogenide. And one historical slide. I did my PhD in ITMO University. And I did my PhD in ITMO University. And at the end of the PhD, we had mega grant with Yuri Gunko, and I studied theoretically chirality in tactile nanocrystals. It's a very short overview of what I did there. Mainly, I did there something like screw dislocation inside nanorods and some non-trivial metric inside nanocrystal quantum dots. We studied chiral perturbations, chiral scrolls, chiral shapes, and chiral arrangement in semiconductors. In principle, it's most of the possibilities which you can use to create chirality in semiconductors. And if you have question, I don't know, maybe you can ask them during the talk. It will be maybe even better. If you have questions about chirality, you can ask, because it's last slide with chirality. Okay, but this talk mostly, I will try to introduce you to the topic, yes, to the transition metal dihalogenides, and I will show you three methods how to control excitons inside structures. First of all, it will be magnetic field. Second, it will be strain in the system and lattice in the system. The last one, if you will still be kind of motivated, I will show you electric field manipulation on excitons and some perspectives in the field. Okay. First of all, I will start from monolayers. And as I said, it will be about transition metal dihalogenides. For transition metal, we use molybdenum, tungsten, and for halogenide, you can use sulfur, selen, or tellur. And these five combinations of monolayers were semiconductors, yes? And they have excitonic band gap around 1 to 2 electron volt. This is why it's kind of optics, yes, why we call them semiconductors. And this is the top view. It looks very similar to graphene from the top, but we have two types of atoms. And this is the side view. Yes, it's kind of not atomically thin, but you have three atoms. And because we don't have inversion symmetry in our system, the gap open, we don't have so-called direct cones in graphene. This is why we have gap. And another property of this material, because of the transition metal, it has a heavy atomic weight. It's it has this material has a very large spin orbit interaction. And in valence band, this can be up to 200 millielectron volt. And in conduction band, it will be around 10 to 15 millielectron volt. And as in graphene, the most important points in, yes? Yes, yes, from the top where it looks like this, yes, and these two atoms, yes. Because it's dihalcogenide, yes, in chemical compound, you have two of them. Yes, 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 yes. Inversion symmetry in monolayer. There is no, this is why we have cone, yes, and we decrease symmetry, and this is why gap open, and we can call it gapped graphene. Yes, you get just the additional energy EG to the Hamiltonian, and it will give you not the linear dispersion but parabolic, like a normal semiconductor.
Red and blue sub
what is different colors? Yes, yes. Here the color is the spin. Yes, distance between them here, it's approximately 100 or 200 millielectron volt. And in K and K prime, they have opposite spin. Yes, the highest valence band at K will have spin up, and at K prime, it will be spin down. And the same for conduction band, but here I just plotted kind of because
they have spin polarization.
Yes. Yes, but these states, they degenerate, yes? In K, you have two non-equivalent points, K and K prime, or you can call them K minus and K plus, and you have degeneracy, yes? If you apply magnetic field, and it will be a second part of the talk, I will show that you can... this is just the corner of Brillouin zone.
Yeah.
Yes. You can do the mirror, or you can just rotate on a 60 degree, because it's actually only 2 point. You can. Maybe on next slide I have, yes, this, they have this symmetry. In principle, we are here, but because we are on a corner, we are the same, yes? Yes.
The hexagon more or less the same,
yes? Yes. Yes, yes. People sometimes plot it like, close to, but in principle, you can plot in all corners with K.
Which essentially is the formula. K and K prime, they differ by the sign.
What different?
Differ by sign, yeah? So they direct, the direction is opposite.
Yes, K, yes, K yes.
So my question is why, in which one the spin is up and in which one the spin is down?
Ah, yes, it's actually it just depends how you define in this space. You need to define first here, yes, and because of our,
let's keep with this definition.
Yes,
so this, use this as a definition for your structure, and you have no freedom in Brillouin zone in case,
yes,
according to what I understood you. Hexagon, it is as it is drawn on the next slide.
Yes.
So more or less the same orientation as this hexagon that we see here.
Yes.
And so this say, for instance, K prime can be so okay. But look,
K will be here and here, yeah, again. Yeah. Yes, and K prime will be here. But usually we define it, yes, you're right. Usually we fix it with, actually, at the end we fix it with the polarization of the transition, and usually we call it K plus and K minus. And we fix this orientation of this hexagon when we know the selection rules, and we call k plus when excitonic transition will have sigma plus selection rule, and k minus when it has sigma minus, and it again will be connected with spin. For k plus, it has spin up highest valence band. For k minus, it has spin down highest valence. Usually, we fix it all the time because here spin orbit splitting is here, and we just look to the top valence band. And usually, we fix all the orientation of the spin, of the exciton non-transition for selection rules, and we look only to valence band, because in conduction bands order can be different. Okay. Yes, and as we already discussed, because it's semiconductor, we like to do optics with semiconductors, and this is why most of the talk, yes, we will look to the excitons. And here for excitons, we have a nonlinear dielectric screen, and we need to introduce not the pure Coulomb interaction, but slightly renormalized one. It's called Rittova-Keldysh potential. And you can see from this picture that screening is not like in 3D case. Yes, in 3D, you can look to the Vanier exciton problem, and you can say, okay, that if you don't have any anisotropy, you can introduce only one epsilon. Here you need to look to the top and bottom environment, and this actually Coulomb interaction effectively, and for such thin layers with some dielectric environment which is larger usually than top and bottom environment, this will give you huge exciton binding energy. It can be around 200 millielectron volt, which is good because we can look to the excitons even at room temperature. For classical semiconductors, it's around 30 MeV, kind of. They're not so good to look for excitons. And here, I show typical band structure. As I said, most interesting point is the K. Yes, here I show only one. And for all these monolayers, actually for the fifth one, it's also direct. All the semiconductors on monolayers that I showed here, they have a direct band gap at K point. When you start to increase number of layers, unfortunately, they start to be indirect, and usually you have special point, Q point, between around the path, around the center of the path K to gamma. You see it go down, and we have a rising gamma point. And but on monolayer scale, we are direct, which is good for semiconductor physics and optics in semiconductors. And here you see it's photoluminescent from two samples. Yes, very connected. Here it's monolayer, and here it's bilayer part of this sample. And it's completely dark, and monolayer part is very bright. And the last introductory slide, you can use not only the TMD, I will call them TMD transition metal tetrahedrite, but we can use graphene, we can use hexagonal boron nitride, and usually the structure, it's like sandwich. You use as a main part, you use TMD for us, you cover them with HBN, dielectric to isolate it and to prevent some chemical reactions with that. And usually for gates, we use graphene, yes, or several layers of graphene. Nice. Now I will go to the part of the magnetic field interaction and Zeeman effect. And as I introduced, you will have for fundamental transition at k point and k plus and k minus, let's call them like this, exciton, fundamental exciton. Fundamental means that it's lowest in energy. And usually it's easy to observe this type of excitons in photoluminescent spectrum. And it's good that we have these two excitons features. We have opposite circular polarization. This is why we, if we have ability to split them, we can observe polarized spectrum. Yes, if we excite our system linear polarization and apply field, magnetic field. Experimentally, it's perpendicular to the layer in Faraday geometry. And because of the Zeeman effect, you will have shifts of valence band and you will have shifts of conduction bands. And in total, what we observe in experiment, we observe exciton Zeeman effect. Yes, it's kind of combination of two of them. And people measure this quite fast because it's a very nice experiment. And they measure G factor of minus four. And the problem was in society that people try to understand why they see this type of G factor. And what we did, we decided to check how to calculate that, and I calculate that in our group. And we have experiment of on the monolayer of tungsten diselenide. This is photoluminescence of the sample with magnetic field of minus 8 tesla. Yes? Yes, I will just explain you. G factor is the dimensionless slope of the split. In experiment, you measure, you, as I said, we excite with linear polarization, apply field. We see the splitting of most of the lines, yes? And one of the line, it has sigma plus, and second of one, it has sigma minus polarization, yes? And we measure energy in split. And G factor, it's just the factor. This is energy, Zeeman splitting. And G factor, it's just the dimensionless value. This is magnetic field. This is Bohr magneton. And this value, G factor, will be dimensionless. No, no, no. Splitting depends on the field. And this G just give you slope. It's not constant. It depends on the property of exciton. It's, we have some constants, but for each exciton, you will I will show you, we will have different G factors. And this is why it's important to understand which G factor related to the exciton, to which kind of exciton it's related. And for,
you should explain that the G-factor is a function of whatever, the orbital function of whatever, it's not at all world constant. It depends strongly on the arrangement of this material, and moreover, for strong shifts, it's also non-linear. Yes, so you can increase the field. Some wave functions are modified, and can be modified.
Yeah, but we will look only to the linear part. We say that it's not the magnetic shift; it's just linear, just linear effect. And the linear effect, as you said, is just combination. Yes, if you just open. I don't know, Landau-Lifshitz, you will find two contributions. And first contribution, yes, as you said, it's constant. If you have free electron, it will have this G factor. It's very close to 2. It's approximately 2, but because of some effects, it's not exactly 2. But in our experiment, it's not important because our error bar, I don't know, plus minus 0 point something. It's not so important for our G factor. We will say that this lambda G factor of free electron related spin contribution is just 2. And S is just a rotation of the spin. And this is why even for free electron, you will see G factor. And it must be approximately 2. Second part, it's orbital part. And for orbital part, maybe it's easier to imagine, I don't know, some molecules, yeah, or hydrogen atom. It has some orbital momentum. And this will be orbital contribution. It's slightly more, or I don't know why people decided not to check that, but it's slightly more complicated in solid state physics, because you have not free electron, you have electron, you have Bloch function for electron, and it also has this part, orbital part. And we know how to calculate it. It doesn't matter which system it is. It's just angular momentum operator. It's just vector product of coordinate operator and momentum. And in the system like, I don't know, hydrogen atom, you can directly calculate this operator, but in on Bloch function, it's because it's complex operator, you need to have intermediate state. Yes, an intermediate state is just state M here. This means that one operator go to the band, like not the band that we're interested in, not band M, but we go to the intermediate band M and back. Yes, this is why we have two operators here. This Xi, it's just the, you can call it Berry connection. People now would call it like this, but I think it's just, usually I call it just coordinate operator that you calculate on the Bloch amplitudes. Yes, these are just Bloch amplitudes. And it's still very classical physics. I think if you open Beeren-Pickus, you will find this formula, or and maybe it will be not Berry connection. But main idea was to marry two things, this classical solid state physics and DFT calculation. Because if you look to the formula, you just need to know this matrix operator, matrix elements and energy. And usually this input you can directly get from the density function theory, some ab initio calculation. And here to compare it with experiment, because we know that we need to compare two exciton and K plus and K minus point. This is just the difference of these shifts. Yes, this is why we have here two. Because of the geometry of experiment, we care about only LZ component. And final result written here or here, it does matter of taste. And again, as I said, you need to know matrix elements of the Berry connection and energy band structure. And usually when you calculate DFT, you have this output as the first outputs that you have from the this ab initio calculation. Finally, very small addition, because I said before only about one electron, but in exciton you have actually electron and hole. And to calculate this, you can summarize G factor of conduction band electron and hole. If you calculate G factor of valence band, it's just the difference between them. And this is approximation for exciton G factor. We did DFT calculation and start to compare it First, about convergence, maybe important part that why simple type binding models or very small basis doesn't work, because you see how many bands you need to take to the account. This is why you need to calculate up to 300 bands in DFT. People never did that, and we did that, and probably this is why all the simple models like type or KP theory, when you take, I don't know, very small number of bands to the account, you will never get correct answer for experiment.
Your last
question,
you mentioned that you have
two bands, highest valence band, and for this compound, tungsten diselenide, it's the singlet transition, because the lowest conduction band, it has a different spin, and C plus, it's second conduction band. Combination of them will give you A exciton, fundamental exciton transition. It will be bright one. And here it's just the contribution to this orbital momentum. And it's just contribution starting from somewhere here, because the largest contribution will be somewhere here. Yes? You see this large jump in calculation. Well, I think it's quite large in Rydberg, but usually we just I don't know, but it's quite high. It's several electron volts higher. It's really high. It's the problem is for conduction band. It's naturally it's not so important, but the problem was for valence band, and qualitative answer to that, because in all the, let's say, classical physics, we have S and P symmetry of valence and conduction bands, yes? And if you look to the calculation of the angular momentum of S or P, it will be much faster, convergent will be much faster, yes? And because we now care about bands, and if from this tungsten, and we care about d orbitals, it seems that this just highlights the problem that for some orbitals, if you have d orbitals or even higher, you must take to the account a very, very large number of bands.
You think you are using some potential?
Yes. Shape of so, but we just use them, and we never checked that shape of the potential.
Essentially, that you have some potential.
Yes.
You have some set of levels in this potential.
Yes.
And when you combine them, in textbook, these levels they form the bands. Yeah? My question is, when you say 300 bands, what? So is it already three bands? Or
yes, it's already with continuum. Yes, but these peaks actually highlights this still orbital character bands. It's mostly continuum, give you quite small, but weight overlap actually.
This small, what I must understand the energy scale of this picture. From which energy this results?
I think it's several EV, at least like 5 electron volt. Yes. It's still you need to take to the account. I mean, it's in principle, it's I don't know exact number on energy for this.
This is 2D system,
yeah? Yes.
So this has we have two dimensional problems, so more or less the number of state squares as a calculate the maximal k vector, we need to take square of this, so it's something like 20, so 1/20 of the period. It will give you enormous energy, kinetic energy.
Yes, but here it's already continuum.
Maybe 100 electron volt, not 1, in my opinion.
I think it was around 0. Okay, I can check. Not sure. But the problem stays actually. We checked that, and several group also checked that even for classical semiconductors, in reality, you need to all the time, even for some gallium arsenide, you actually, for correct effective masses and for correct G factors, you have to calculate for very, very large number of bands. Okay.
The energy spectrum you get correctly from this calculation. And the spectral problem.
Spectral, yes, yes. But it was on DFT level for excitons, you need to go to the beta Salpeter equation. We didn't do that. But because this, we need to care about only differences between energy, it's not so important go to the beta Salpeter equation. Even JW, we don't need that. In DFT, because in DFT, on DFT level, you have very nice, I don't know, energy bands still and differences between energy and matrix element, I think precision of them in maximum. If you start to add more and more correction to the numerical calculation, results was worse than we had. And we calculate this for full Brillouin zone, this orbital part of orbital matrix element in Z direction. And we calculate for highest valence band and calculate it for lowest conduction bands. And we found very nice agreement. It's maybe because the contrast, like, we're here.
Oh.
Yes. I just plot more than one, just to have it square and to show a little bit further. And you see, it has a maximum mostly in these points. Yes, yes, yes. We have some additional maximum, like here, it's not seen, but like here, it's also like here, it's maximum, here, two maximums. And in principle, effect can be larger at some points. But
this is not the energy position, this is
just matrix element. When you take a grid and we just move a little bit with grid, and you just take like exactly, you can take all the points from Brillouin zone in principle. Using this calculation. And this is why we can calculate not only direct transition, but also indirect transition.
But still, you have two energy levels, V minus one.
Yeah, V, yes. Right? Yes, you take, for example, one V and one C, one of them. Usually, V minus one, it's not so important. Usually, it's most interesting, you take V and one of these. Because in one materials, for tungsten based materials, you have spin, like opposite spin for the lowest conduction band, and for highest, you have same.
Sorry.
It's around 30 milliV. In conduction band. Yes, spin orbit splitting in conduction band. Yes, it's much smaller than in valence band. Sometimes it's. Here we just sometimes it changes the spin, it crosses. Yes,
and calculate all my just two conduction bands. Then I sort them and plot the lowest one and the next one. Yeah? So will be the gap between them will be, is it everywhere positive or negative?
No, spin bands, they can cross each other. Yes? Yes, yes. We definitely cross them at gamma point.
But, is this when you see, is it the lowest band?
Lowest band, yeah. Just lowest, yes. But in K, we can well define a spin. Okay. Yes, yes, yes. At gamma, definitely sometimes in these Q points, like here. And yes, but if you around a key point, the transition will be well defined.
Just understanding that the crossing of the energies are the white color.
I think sometimes yes, but here it's, for example, it's just by symmetry. This is direction of this is gamma k prime, yes, and this is m direction, and then m direction just because of the symmetry, just okay. Here you just saw what we calculate for full Brillouin zone,
yeah,
yes.
I in general, you have over crossing many lines.
Yeah, sometimes people that they don't like 3D. Okay, but yes, good suggestion. I maybe for next time I will plot them in this way. Yes, yes, yes. And here you see that we can calculate, as I said, indirect transition. And if we see something like this in the spectrum, it will be good sign that we look to the indirect transition. And actually we prove that, and we prove for many systems, we prove it for monolayer, for homobilayer, for this type, and even one more, I will not show exact results, but we can find the difference between two bilayer systems. This is CVD grown samples, and they grow in the two stackings. One of them we call 2H or anti-aligned stacking. You see this large triangle, this is first layer, second layer, it's small triangle, and they anti-aligned, yes? And second stacking, it has, we call it 3R or just R stacking, and they aligned. You can see, again, top and side view of this system. And we calculate again all these G factors, measure photoluminescence, go to the region of indirect transition, because for indirect transition we look to the different excitons. For the Q excitons, we figure out that where are these Q excitons, and most interesting that these two combinations they have. Even here, we have different indirect transitions that we can resolve. It was a very nice technique. We used that many times at the end, even for this Moret structure. I will tell you slightly later when you have Moret in hetero bilayer, in hetero free layer. And this technique is just very nice method to understand what is the nature of excitons in photoluminescence or in absorption spectrum. And we can calculate it for all these valleys for spin configuration. And we prove it at least for these four systems. But I think now we want to prove it also for homo free layer. Yes, when you have free layer of the same type. But I think the method is very good. Okay. Yes?
So it's one connection between Q and experiment.
Okay, let's go back. What we compare? We look to this spectrum. Here, actually, we have this is fundamental exciton, and four, we actually have some indirect transitions, which are lower in energy, and they have different G factors. Yes, different G factor means that we applied electric or we applied magnetic field, and you just divide energy by this mu and magnetic field. So you can extract directly from the... Yes, you extract dimensionless value from experiment. Moreover, this value, it has sign, which is also important. Yes, because, for example, sigma plus can go one direction or it can go to the opposite direction, which is also very important in future. And it has G factor, and together with also these selection rules, it gives you at least several things like amplitude and sign. And it's different, yes, because it's not only that we calculate this G factor of 4. I will show you that it can be like minus 16 or minus 10, minus 12. Okay, now we will go to the area of mesoscale lattice reconstruction in bilayers, and it relates to the at least two layers, yes, and I will tell you about two layer systems. Maybe you know already, now it's very fancy topic, Murray heterostructures. You can get them using two things, like twist your structure. Even if you take same type of layers, you stack them not in exactly symmetric angle, yes, not like 0 degree or 60 degree, that will give you R or H stacking. But if it would be something like close to the 0 but not 0, or close to the 60 but not 60, you will see that you have new super lattice, yes, as in classical semiconductors, but the way how you can get it, it's very beautiful, at least. This is a first way. And in the system with heterostructure, you can have a large enough lattice mismatch between lattice parameter. It means like in top and bottom layer, lattice parameters were different. Yes. And again, you will have superstructure. In this superstructure, you have in real space, you have a larger unit cell. We will call it Murray unit cell. And in brilliant zone, it will be smaller, and we will call it mini brilliant zone, as in classical semiconductor physics. And it was just geometry, but in reality, most of the properties in such system, they depend on the, let's say, real space position. And most important, I think, that electrons in monolayer, you can they can feel effective potential from this Murray system, and you can introduce this effective periodic Murray potential for electron holes. You can do it also for excitons. You see that the polarization of transition view also depends, and at the end you can reach different system like exciton super lattices or quantum dot arrays. You see that this potential, it just now it's just kind of cross section, like this just cut it from ABC and again to the A, and the potential modulation can be quite large. It can be up to the, I don't know, now I think I saw even more than 100, like 200 milliev. And in most cases, you just introduce it as a just additional smooth modulation. Yes, I will not talk about very large angles where, let's say, Murray unit cell comparable to the lattice mismatch or to the lattice parameter in monolayers. We can introduce smooth potential. We can call it like continuum models for this system, yes? And closer to this reconstruction, it was idealistic picture. You take two layers, put one of them to another, and you think that nothing happens with lattice. But in reality, we will see domain formation and why this happens. First of all, because if you grow bulk, yes, bulk van der Waals structure, it will be in one stacking, most stable stacking for this structure. It will choose one of these structure, one of these stackings, yes. And if you have just a bulk system with one compound, it will grow exactly in one stacking. But here we have many stackings, yes. Sometimes these hexagons they overlap exactly hole over hole. Sometimes you will have a hole of hexagon over metal or over halcogenide, and you kind of shift one layer relatively to another. And because we use these continuum models, we can say that this system will have approximately all the possible stackings in the system. For each real point, yes, in a real point in the real space, it will have different stackings inside Murray unit cell.
What is that, G?
Yes, yes, now I'm just want to go here. And this is just the generalized stacking fault energy or adhesion energy, or you can call it just interlayer energy. And you again, you usually do this from the DFT. You just sample your Murray unit cell in some finite grid. And again, smooth it because of the smooth potential. Usually you use just first harmonics for this symmetry of superlattice. And it just the interlayer energy, for example, if you take just two molybdenum diselenide, it will have two possible, as I said, R and H stacking. And for graphene, it has only one possibility because graphene, it has higher symmetry. It has on. Yes, if this is just this cross, you just cross your Murray unit cell and you start with a very high symmetric point AA. Yes, you go to the 1/3 of this diagonal, it will be second symmetric stacking to the third and again back to the AA. It's just real space diagonal. And these are three highest symmetry stackings. And they must be on this large diagonal. And exactly at this point, you will have extrema. Yes. For some of them, you have maximum, which is the sign that it's not optimal stacking. It's like you take two layers from infinity and put them close to the exactly this stacking. Yes. 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 Yeah, but we just put zero to the optimal stacking. Yes. We compare three possibilities. One, sometimes two of them, sometimes one of them will be optimal. This will be zero. Let's say if we find the naturally growth system, it will be at this, yes, it just optimal. I will call it optimal stacking. It's negative. If I calculated it, yes, it's negative. Yeah, actually, it just this is the way how these people decided to introduce it. But it
what is the modulation 60
processes? It's per cell. It means that you yes. It's 300. 300. Yes, but it's again, I think, normalized. Yes.
So more or less, modulation is
Yes. 50%. Yes. Yes. But it's still enough for domain formation. Okay. And again, one like we have not optimal stacking. Yes. And we have one or two optimal stackings and something like intermediate. I don't know. Not very high symmetric points. And because in your system, this was interlayer interaction, interlayer energy interaction. But you can imagine that you can introduce strain to the system, intralayer strain. And if you introduce it and just solve optimization problem and it will be compromised, I can effectively increase area of optimal stackings, yes, somehow, and decrease area of the non-optimal stackings. And this is why you will see domain formation. This is the energy, where here we plot energy when it's, let's say, just interlayer energy without any strains, yes? It just, here you see just maps for this strain, and again, like minimum, 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 maximum, maximum. This is just Mare units. We could call it configuration spell, but for simplicity, it's just the same.
White color, it's a color bar means what?
I think we put it exactly to this triangle, but it's there is no physical meaning. It's just at the end, when you trigger your Mare unit cell, it just here just straight lines, yes? Just to cut your Mare unit cell in something like triangles, yes? But at the end, where we will change the shape, you can think about them as a boundary, yes? But boundary, it's at the end, it will be boundary of domains. They just, but where you exactly introduce boundary, just. It just this plot, this plot, it's just diagonal from here. Yes.
Zero means optimal.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Zero this is A, B, and
white color is something in between.
Yes, in between. But in between here, we just choose it. You see, just put it like triangle shape. When it will change, let's say reconfigure, you just introduce strain and kind of domain. Domain where we have same color, yes, where will be something like dark orange or violet or blue or red. And now I will show you result of the periodic reconstruction. Periodic means that we have infinite system, and it reconstruction will be periodic inside Mare unit cell. Like all the reconstruction inside all Mare unit cell will be absolutely the same. This is the meaning of the periodic. And you see, because initially system was like this, yes? It's just plot of the larger plot of the map in real space. And it was like this, but if, and it was for 4 degree. Reconstruction effects for degrees larger than 4, it's very small effect because it's hard to introduce strain in the system because Mare unit cell is very small. This is why strain will be very large. And effect of this strain, usually if you imagine again this structure, yes, you just locally untwist your structure. Yes, it's like small twist around this high symmetry point that give you domain formation. Yes, you just locally twist your system around this minimum, and you create domain. And you create two domains if it's system like graphene or this 0 degree stacking, or you create only one big domain which will give you hexagonal structure, yes? And if you decrease and decrease and decrease the twist angle, you will see that domains will have very large size. Yes, it can be even larger than like 10 nanometers, or for some system it can be even larger. Yes, you see how this picture changed to this. Yes, and this dark region is just stacking, approximately stacking of one type. Yes, you see these white lines, and these white lines, it's like domain boundaries, borders. And in all conditions, you will have non-optimal stacking where we'll create something like quantum dots, like when the stacking change very fast on a nanometer scale. Yes, yes, yes. And effectively, yes, you just untwist locally, and in this area you twist back structure, kind of like all the largest gradients of the strain, they come to this place, and this is why sometimes it's localized electrons or holes, which is nice. Okay, this was idealistic picture of reconstruction. In reality, sometimes it can be like in this right panel, it can be quite periodic, especially if you take the best area for publication. But in reality, even for graphene, people understood that, it's not ideal. Okay, you can choose some area where it will be approximately periodic. And I think maybe with technology, you will find some good results, but in reality, it looks like this. And we decided to do the same in experiment and in theory for real large samples. And we choose for the sample, we choose heterostructure. We choose two diselenides, one with molybdenum, moly, and one with tungsten. We create type 2 heterostructure. And this is very important because one like part of exciton electrons, they sit in the molybdenum layer, and holes, they sit in the tungsten layer. It's a specially indirect exciton, like in classical semiconductors. And this is why energies of this interlayer exciton, they will have smaller energy. Yes, these are energies of intralayer, like for tungsten and for molybdenum, and interlayer, they will be around 1.4 electron volt. And if you look to the photoluminescence, you will definitely see them, because absorption is not so good because they not overlap, but photoluminescence will be easy to measure. And we did that for many samples. Here, I just show only one. And you see, this is a large triangle. It's just the molybdenum part. And small, darker triangles, here it's just tungsten. And effectively, we look just to these two small triangles here. It's here. And one of them, as I said, anti-aligned, we call it H sample. And second one will be R aligned. Size of the small triangle, it's slightly less than 10 microns. We have twist angle. I scrolled. Yes, it's here. It's unfortunately, yes, something happened with this line. This was changed in the shape. Sorry. Yes, it's actually here. Yes, and I see that. It's just this part of the. We measure angles between them. Where approximately, we can call it like approximately one degree. And here it's, we can call it 60 degree minus one or plus minus one. It's lattice mismatch in this system, it's quite small, and it's also very important because reconstruction effect will be not so dramatic. If you have mismatch around 4 or 10%, it will be much smaller, because again, to create such a large strain, you need to spend much more energy on that because you play with interlayer strains. And this is just rough estimation what would be the Moray periodicity. It will be approximately 30 nanometers. But for reality, it's, you will see that maybe it's not so important. And it's separately, this triangle wavy grown in CVD, because in CVD, usually they have this triangular shape, but we grow separately, yes? After that, we took one of them and put in another, like it's exfoliated, and after that, we create structure. And we measure photoluminescence, and you see that it's not homogeneous. And we decided to analyze this homogeneity. This is just PL map intensity integrated around this interlayer peak only. And this is just the integrated intensity for this region. And you see that each sample, it's almost dark, some bright spots inside, but almost it's much brighter than H. And we have a possibility to study kind of hyperspectrum. We choose just the point here, and we look to the spectrum inside this point. Inside bright spot, we can look to the dark points and measure, let's say, just this type of spectrum. And we did that. Here I show just the bright spots, two bright spots, and they have quite simple spectrum because it's more or less one line. All the experiment done at 4 Kelvin, and it's something like one line, maybe not exactly one because of the not symmetric line shape, but we can say that it's very simple, bright, very simple spectra for the bright spots. When we go to the dark spots, we see very like a lot of fine structure. Also, we see shifts and they're darker. Like here, it's like 50 times smaller. Here, it's 10 times smaller. But the structure is much more complicated. And now we know what to do. We can measure not only the, let's say, intensity of photoluminescence. We use technique and measure G factors. We measure G factors of these bright peaks. We measure G factors of dark peaks. And we found, for example, that for our structure, for aligned, we found G factor of plus 6. We found spots with G factor of 0. And for some regions, we found two G factors, like plus and minus. For H, G factor was larger in absolute value. Again, for the very simple spectra, we found one more line, very, very dark, actually. It's quite dark. And these two lines, they have different G factor. Again, calculate them. Calculate G factor for dark spots, and this maybe it's too, I will not tell about it. It's polarons. It's still ongoing understanding. And from theory, we. Yes, it just again, we excite with linear polarization and resolve G factor for the. Yes.
Some of them have strong absorption.
We excited to the monolayer, one of the monolayer peaks, one of the monolayer excitons, and relax to the this interlayer states, and this is the region of interlayer photoluminescence. We excite to the mono layer because yes, we need some.
Shown is just splitting between two circular polarizations.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Excitation, we just CW remote. Yeah, yes. And we also measure PC, like polarization of peaks when we excite with circular polarization and see what would be the photoluminescence. Yes, if it has same sign, if it's positive or it's changed the sign, which is also one more characteristic to compare with theory. And we did that, and we measure, we can compare energies. We have, let's say, brightness as an oscillator strength, we have polarization of the peak, and we have all the numbers for G factors. As I said, sometimes for H configuration, we will have triplet state lower in energy. This is why we care about singlet and triplet, at least for H. Samples, and we just found what are the stackings that can give us this optical characteristic. It was one more contribution from theoretical understanding. And what I did additionally, I did numerical calculation of the large scale reconstruction. Because previously I show periodic case, it will be looks like this. If without any strain, it will be like this. Here introduce domain borders slightly different way. It's like slightly larger. After periodic reconstruction, when I use a periodic boundary condition, it will be just periodic. Yes. And you see it must be something like this. If I take the angle around 4 degrees pre something. And if I introduce, if I relax boundaries in this large triangle, and this triangle it's quite huge because it's like several microns here. Size of the triangle is several microns. And if I relax my boundary condition, I will see that in reality, usually you will have formation of large domain, not just periodic. This is why in on different edges, on bubbles between layers, you will have very non-symmetric and a very large 2D domains. Close to that, because you kind of change this net, you go to the something like wires, wire type system, it will be 1D. And the calculation shows that most optimal will be, for example, this one, when you have extremely large domain and you have small wires at the end of the. Black points, it's just the point where it's kind of created around which Moray unit cell, if I look to this picture, if I untwist around this. Exactly around this point. For example, here I untwist around this domain, yes, and I this domain just extend this area over all triangle. Because you have relaxed boundary condition, you expect that it's possible. I fixed boundary condition on the this side. Yes, it's kind of it's just edge or tip of the sample, and here I looked for something like still periodic system just to fix boundary condition on one side. And when they connected with edges, you will have very complex domain structure. We call them like 2D domain, 1D domain, and 0D. It's like these things when it's similar to periodic systems. And at the end, we have ability to the, do scanning electron microscopy experiment. And let's say method was very nice, but in optics, you don't have a very high resolution. Yes. Indirectly understand our spectrum with optical characteristic. Yes, we look somewhere here. We know G factor, we know the circular polarization of transition, but resolution it's 1 micron. But now we did a scanning electron microscopy, and this using this microscopy, you will see the contrast between stackings. And we observe, for example, for H type, exactly what we understand. You have this tip, you have extremely large domain, and it's connected through net of the 1D domains. And if you go deeper, deeper to the sample, you will have something like periodic domain system. Everything will be dependent on the shape of your sample, on initial strain in your system, on the cracks in the system. And this is why it just, if you want really to understand what is the mesoscale reconstruction, you really need to look to the full sample at the end. You need to know geometry, full geometry of the sample.
What does it mean, those
dark lines? Dark lines, this technique is sensitive to the stacking. It's like, because you send electrons, yes, and you rotate your sample or not rotate sometimes for one of them, we don't rotate, but you rotate your sample in a way that electron beam, let's say, C2 atoms on each other, and this is why it's scattered in a different way, yes? Sometimes you have hole over hole, yes, in your Murray structure, and it will give you contrast. Largest contrast will be between areas where you have hole over hole and where you have atom over hole. This is just geometry of the experiment when you send these electrons. And we calculate that in one walk, we just really simulate with Monte Carlo this SEM experiment. Everything was nice. And this is first time that we did that for this heterostructure. And at the end, let's say final and the very nice part, because wherever you ask us to do the point-to-point comparison, this was very hard for experiments because you need to first measure all the optics, and on the second part you measure electron microscopy because you destroy your sample effectively. And we did that, and I said we look to this area of large domain. We see very simple spectrum in photoluminescence. If you look to these wire types, you will have several lines shifted. G factor will be zero, because for all like 1D domains, you mix K and K prime, and you will not see the effect of the magnetic field. And if you look to the area where you have many, many small domains, 0D domains, you will have very complex structure. And the end, like as a motivational, like, if you have ability to introduce initial strain, you will have to kind of imprint the landscape for most of the quasi-particles in your system. Yes? If you have ability to rotate somewhere samples and froze these strains, you can imprint, in principle, the landscape. And it's called like fancy name, like Straintronics, one of the main methods. We have Valetronics, Spintronics, and this is Straintronics. And if we conclude here, it's just the sum of the, like, we are identifying all the important, I would say, Murray exciton landscapes. We figure out that in real samples, you will have all of the domains. Because initially people publish, okay, we have samples, we see only this, or only this. We just prove that actually it's in most of the samples all the time, that you just, if you don't look to what you want to see, you will have everything. And at the end, yes, you need to use this idea of lattice reconstruction when you build devices. And if you still have energy, yes, yes, okay. It will be a little bit maybe shorter, but the last part, how we can control excitons, we can apply not only magnetic field, but we can apply electric field perpendicular to the sample. And this part will be about intra and interlayer exciton hybridization. How to reach this? First of all, we choose slightly different heterostructure. We have moly diselenide and tungsten disulfide. Here, lattice mismatch already 4%. And this means that reconstruction effect will be not so dramatic. It may will change slightly something, but you will not have this dramatic effect of very ugly reconstruction. This is why I think it's very interesting to take layers with large enough lattice mismatch to have on most of the sample approximately the same properties. And why we choose these monolayers? Because we just look to the calculation of the band gaps and relative position of these conduction bands, and you see that conduction bands of these two materials were almost in resonance. This is just energy. This is highest valence band. This is lowest conduction bands. And we choose this and this one. It's just two different. First is just pure DFT, second with JW. It's like with correction. Yes, but we give approximately the same result on the in JW. It's even better in resonance. But yes, in reality, we need to look to the JW. That energies of bands of conduction bands at K points, we will have approximately the same value.
Ah, for these two.
Yes. Okay. Like this parabolic minimum of these two bands,
yeah,
where you.
Yes.
Yes. Like just on the top parts for conduction bands. Valence band, they are not in resonance. And this is why. Yes. Monolayer. Yes. Yes. Yes, this is from vacuum in calculation, it will be from vacuum. In our case, we just look to the relative positions. Yes. We hope that it will be approximately the same as people measure separate. In reality, it will be not the same because it's different environment. Yes, but it just kind of just the choice that I think effect it's still not huge. You will have some effect of relative change, yes, but effect it's not so huge if you take different layers. This combination is kind of the best. We actually on I will not show, but we also took this one for just and theory. Excitons for excitons.
You have these nice pictures for mold stage when the monolayers are far away from each other.
Yes.
Then these are the energies measured from the
We changed the energy scale, and this is why to do correct kind of band, you need to calculate them together. Yes, but to calculate them together, it's different problem because we have this lattice mismatch. This is why, if we want to have cheap calculation, we need to create small, very small, let's say monolayer size unit cell. It will be cheap, and I don't know. You just add plus three atom to. Yes, and this is why it's kind of error bar will be again very large. If you want to calculate real Murray unit cell, you need to have very big cluster. I think it was done for some systems maybe 1 year ago, but you really have to use cluster time because it's just huge. Some people now it's let's say the era of all these AI things when you just train your system, it will be, if you train good, it will be cheaper to calculate different angles and different lattice mismatch. But still, it's only ongoing process. How to do it cheaper? And when I don't need this comparison, just pure monoliths, I just calculate whatever need. And that's it. But here, yes, you're right. It will be different. And for simplicity, we just use this, and it works. It works quite good. Yes, and one more time, I want to say. Electrons will be hybridized, yes, because they in the resonance. But valence band of the tungsten disulfide it's much lower in energy, and this is why we will care about only direct exciton in monolayer of molybdenum, and indirect excitons when hole is in mono molyware and the electron is in tungsten layer. And what we can do, we can build this sample, yes, we cover it with HBN, and if you apply voltage to these gates, you effectively introduce electric field perpendicular to the sample. You can do the doping effect, but I will not tell you about this in the talk. And I built the model, and we compare what we see in this spectrum. We see, first of all, like photoluminescence, and we see in absorption, like three peaks, we can call it like M1, M2, M3. We build the model of that. For modeling, you just create like in the super lattices, you create this band folding, and it's just standard procedure for solid state physics. When you have mini Brillouin zone, and you just fold all the like in this case, I use parabolic approximation. You just fold this parabola inside. At one moment, you cut your bases. And this is why your monolayer monolayer exciton, it just rearrange oscillator strength between many bands. Yes, in monolayer, it will be one peak in absorption. In this structure, you create we use 13 bands, bands in this system, and you create new more excitons. It is susceptibility, and it's just absorption. You can absorption because
GR for experiment.
DR, because in experience we never measure absorption. We measure differential reflection. We have substrate without sample. And we measure it with sample, and using this, it's indirectly. And at the end, it will this give you, let's say, incorrect line for absorption because it changed the phase. But you can fix that it will be quite symmetric and at least positive mostly. And just for comparison, yes, in theory, I just calculate absorption and we fix phase in experiment. For this is just the
double prime means imaginary part.
Yes, imaginary part, and it's just absorption. Yes. You can. We never did that, but it would be mostly one line. Yes, and it will be somewhere here. Yes, you just need to introduce some relaxation path, but this was not, let's say, aim of the part. We measure photoluminescence to prove that it's the lowest energetic state, that nothing is lower like here, yes? Nothing is here. Because interlayer exciton will have very, very small oscillator strength. only intra-layer excitons we have oscillator string, and if photoluminescence will be shifted very large, yes, not the small shift, and if it will be shifted on a very large, we need to think about this, that maybe you have more states in the red region. But to model it, it's not so hard in principle. Okay, and now we start to apply electric field in experiment. And here, maybe you don't see the contrast of the third peak. Yes, here is, yes, because here it's, in reality, it's a doublet. Yes, and it's anti-crossing. And we use the model, and the model shows us like exactly at these points, you have interlayer excitons, and they cross intralayer Moray peaks. And exactly at this position, you see it, especially for M3. At M3, you see this anti-crossing. And this is nice because, again, we actually did many things on G factors. We proved that G factors were also changed when we have this anti-crossing. It's nice that we can find special electric field that we can exchange our system from type 1 semiconductor to type 2 semiconductor when interlayer exciton will be lower in energy. Yes, it's, and you can use it maybe for some. Interlayer IX, it's interlayer exciton which cross intralayer 1. Intralayer 1, we use the idea that way insensitive to the. This one, this is the law. Intralayer exciton, the lowest, yes. If you apply large enough field, you exchange the system from type 1 to type 2 heterostructure. And in principle, electrons first hybridize at this point and jump to the different layer. We prove it from a different point with G factor measurement. And one more interesting point that these three peaks that you see here, 1, 2, 3, excitons at this point, we have different spatial distribution in real space. And we want to use it next for sensing, yes, because now we know that first ground exciton without any voltage, it has one localization, M2 has mostly different, and M3, which doublet in reality, it's, if you plot the second M3, it will be approximately the same, and it will feel a different local space position. Okay. And to summarize, this part that we can control with electric field, we can hybridize exciton, we can find this hybridization in absorption, we can find the field that we need to like apply to the system that put a system in exact resonance. Actually, we prove it for slightly different system when you have again, molydiselenide and molydietelluride. The model works also nice. And this yes. This is why, like interlayer exciton, because you have static dipole moment, it has shifts. Yes, this is probably I forgot to say. Yes, only this interlayer exciton they will have shifts. And we use like this idea for kind of next works, like we can use excitons as reporters of the band alignment and charges, charge order. Because when you apply field, but if you change the voltage on these gates. In a different way, you also dope your system. And when you dope your system, it will also charges, for example, electrons, they will also localize in some spots. And when we start to measure not exactly excitons, but trions, and through these trions, we can understand property of lattice that we studied, because at the end it will be quite localized electronic lattice.
Like, it's left, you put dash line the corner, but it's red, it's a yellow spots. Like I can shift to get similar picture, right?
Yes, but this is this rhombus, it's diamond, it's relative position, it's absolute. Yes, here it's it has absolute position, like it's the same, but this is in the corner. Yes, this is 1/3 on this diagonal, and this is 2/3 on diagonal. And when we add electrons to the system, it will be also additional interest. Like usually we have the same localization as M1, and the binding energy of trion is huge for this system. If you look to the M2 and put electron somewhere here, it will not fill this electron as much as in case of M1, but it's the topic that I put to the doping, like to the perspective what to what you can do with this system. And first thing, I think it's like in physics, people create more and more names, just combine them. And here it's idea that you can put TMD to the cavity and study more polaritons, which will be polaritons in a Moret system. And again, you can apply magnetic field. As I said, you can use Dolben effect and study different correlated space. For example, for this system that I showed, this is the exciton, and you can tune relative position of conduction bands and start to dope. And you can dope, for example, first to the one layer. At one level of doping, you dope to the second layer, and it's and with exciton, you can indirectly sense this electron lattice. And what I started to do now, it's also interesting for me. It's new magnetic materials, because all the topic, all the talk was about transition metal dihalogenide, but van der Waal structure, the number of them is huge. And now people can grow these type of structures. And because of chromium, they are magnetic. And it's antiferromagnet. Inside layer, this structure, this is top view, this is side view. And inside layer, it's ferromagnetic order, and between layers, it's antiferromagnetic. And again, we can use different types of Moret things to create magnetic domains and measure magnetic properties of such structure and apply magnetic field in different ways.
And you can consider these two layers as just domains, right? Not antiferromagnetic.
If you can measure from the side, yes, but maybe measuring from with this distance is Angstrom, yes, like or maybe several Angstroms, but yes, maybe from side it, and it must be cut it exactly. No, but if you do the again this Moret physics, you rotate them. And if you rotate for quite small angles, I think it will create your domains in the system. But domains can be studied even for, let's say, not rotated system, because of the, let's say, environment is not so perfect, and you applied field, for example, at some direction, and you will see the growth of the domains at the end. Yes, but this will not be connected with Moray, but still just domain formation, or at one moment you can apply such field when it will be ferromagnetic order, everything. People, I think, measure already here some magnetic resistance. Yes, because you can imagine that, let's say, if you measure current in this direction, if it's anti-ferromagnetic, it will be smaller. Yes, and if you apply electric field and align all the system to the ferromagnetic order, it will be larger current, like always magnetic resistance experiment. Okay. And as a last slide, I just show you my wife first, Irina Martynenko. Yes, and our last collaboration we did together with her. She just recently joined the group. Yes, and I show you here our collaboration on her topic of DNA origami. The idea was to do the hybrid structure, and we did that. Hybrid structure was this team DNA origami patterns. Ira, she can do that. And what we did from our side, we put on this pattern large flake of the TMD, and this is the pattern. This scale bar, it's around 4 micron, and this is the part she used in lithography. And we cover full pattern with TMD on top, and again measure photoluminescence. In this case, it was room temperature, and we measure again photoluminescence, and we prove that we found the bonding between TMD and tile groups, because on this triangle you will have many tiles, and because of the sulfur disulfur bonding, effectively after this bonding you will give local additional electron to this. You locally dope your system. And I think it's still kind of ongoing. And I think it's quite localized, close to the bonding. And this is why, as I said, we can measure photoluminescence. And in photoluminescence, we have two peaks. One of them is the exciton. Second one is the trion. Trion means that you have exciton plus electron. And because of this localization effect, you have here we have density of these triangles with tiles, and we have smaller and smaller and smaller. And you see, if we have larger density of these tile tails, we will have very dark region for exciton. And if we go again to the very large density, we see very bright line. It's just intensity of one of them, intensity of exciton. Second line is the intensity of trion. And moreover, I think the most interesting, yes, because with large density you see the effect, but if you look to this region when the density was very small, we found, I think, like single pattern, like single triangle effects, because now the distance between them is around micron, and spot it's around micron. You see the correlation between position and bright trion regions. Here I plot the ratio between this divided by exciton energy, and you see that effect is quite pronounced. And I think it's quite good and beautiful. Okay, now I thank you very much for attention. I hope you not tired maybe from too many theory. I try to decrease maybe sometimes slides in theory. This is my professor Alex Hergele in Munich. Shen, here the best spectroscopist that I know in our group. He did most of the measurements in spectroscopy. Anna did SEM measurements. Ismail, Lee, they can grow samples. And Borislav did this electric effect intra-interlayer hybridization. And I think all other people somehow contribute. Thank you very much.
Yes. So on this black and white slide with many dots, so
yes.
On the left scale, is it the
it's
of the lattice, right?
Yes, it's lattice kind of parameter. Yes.
So
this is 4 micron.
I believe it's 3 micron.
It's 3 micron. I need to replot. So sorry. Yes. So thank you. I need to replot it. I think yes, it must be because I plotted in a different way. Yes, good comment.
Can we try different lattices different lattices or to get different types of more patterns?
This was just monolayer in this case.
No, not in this case.
Ah,
previously.
Okay.
So when you were
because TMD they have this triangle or hexagonal kind of honeycomb lattice, but and this is why you can have starting from higher symmetry again same hexagonal lattice, or if you stretch your system you will have a different Moré system. But here, if I go to this, yes, here in this shape, if you just rotate it, it will be rectangular.
Also, could you tell, maybe I missed it, all these very interesting details about theoretical computations, but when you consider these two layers, two monolayers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know that grapheme is unstable. Grapheme layer is unstable, so it never ideally flat, essentially. So how do you take this into account that these layers will be somewhat?
Maybe
somewhat. You know, they will have undulations.
Okay. I think this was done maybe by Landau or like 2D crystals in vacuum were, let's say, quite not stable, because all this oscillation, all the flexural modes, for very simple models, they will give you the divergence. Yes, and like all phonons, and in reality, this happens kind of, because. If you do something wrong with your sample, it start to create scrolls. This is why we put everything on a substrate. Yes, substrate also give you stabilization because you have, and the property of substrate, it's very important. In our case, because we use this HBN, it's more or less flat. Yes, maybe on global level, you will have, on large scale, you will have some, kind of change of the height, but we measure height of the samples and the AFM, it's quite flat. And but some people really think about substrate because especially I think it's important for transport people. You first grow your substrate, it's special, I don't know, you really grow it atomically flat and grow after that using CVD, you grow on top of that, you grow TMD, and it will be quite perfect in this case. It's very important for this transport people because environment give you many additional defects, and
it was always the problem for critical consideration of multi-layer graphene. It's it's very hard to understand.
But it's okay. And second part, in reality, what I think you want to say, that maybe one more point, what will be very important on micro scale. If again, I go back to these pictures, yes, this free stacking in the stable regime where you have different distance between layers. But it's 5% difference around. In reality, yes, it changes the Z distance between layers, but effect, most important effect, actually relative position in XY plane. In DFT, if, as I said, if you do the very large scale DFT calculation in Marie unit cell, yes, you will see slightly change that component. But in reality, it's not so important.
Am I right that all the science on graphene done with inside the flake? Because it's like several microns, so you always can find that area to study them. But of course, after that, you will have all the stuff you mentioned.
Yes, and I don't know, maybe I have pictures, but inside some samples, in real samples, you also have, maybe you can see it here, even not. Like sometimes you see spots like this, and it just really kind of bubbles, and it's not exactly plain. But if you want to understand realistic picture, yes, you just look.
You gave an answer.
Yes.
Really, these undulations are at around 5%. What the most important
thing
is the relative position.
Yes. Environment give you some modulation again. But real problem is this XY kind of reconstruction in plane. But maybe a decision for the problem, as I said, for the next heterostructure, you just choose a structure with, 4 or 5% lattice mismatch. In this case, it will be not so random on a mesoscale. You can find, let's say, micron size, more than micron size, several micron size area with homogeneous response.
Other questions?
I have a question regarding your DNA ligand work. How stable were those DNA ligands? I mean, did you not need to keep them in the fridge, to stop them from rotting?
It was room temperature experiment.
Yeah, but for how long could they stay?
This, I think maybe this sample we did, I think we did that almost 1 year ago, and it's still stable. We are new to that, if I don't remember the temperature, but it's quite stable.
And those DNAs, they are not in a solution, so they...
It's lithography. I don't know. It's lithography with DNA. Yes, you have a substrate, and with lithography you print this pattern. And on top of that, you put TMD solution. But I think during the process, maybe during drying, you need to have some solution how you build the pattern. But after you build this pattern, quite stable. But maybe it's better to ask Irina. I just propose, okay, let's add tiles. I think we will couple, and they coupled. This is, I think, the most kind of interesting for me, that it's really coupled, it's locally coupled, and you really localize kind of your bonding. Because, and this, I think, the first experiment, and we did that in a very rough way. We put many tiles, we put different density with DNA origami. It's just, let's say, the beginning to understand exact mechanism, stability, and we need to go further with it.
How heavy is DFT contributions are for 300 bands? I think it's already a very good computer.
Yes. Yes, but this type of calculation, in principle, you can do on not huge cluster. You don't need this Leibniz Rechenzentrum. But yes, for example, this calculation of reconstruction, this was quite dense because I mean, I use quite big samples. This was very expensive. I need to use many nodes for calculation, but it's just because I just want to show kind of mesoscopic reconstruction. But for monolayer, for DFT, for bilayers, for small unit cells, you don't need very large clusters. As I said, if you want to calculate full Mori unit cell with several hundreds atoms, it will be expensive. But again, as I said, now it's new era of this AI. When you train your system for several samples, and after that for same heterostructure, but for different angles in Mori, you can calculate it very fast. Because you don't need to run real DFT every time. You calculate relaxation using AI. After that, you just run one shot DFT and you get result. But it's now just kind of what people do in when they want to create cheaper calculation. Могу отвечать на русском.
Я, поскольку мы задавали вопросы в процессе, я думаю, надо поблагодарить этот раз.